Madhava Kunjabihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabihari. Gopi Chanda Balabha Giravadir Hari. Gopi Chanda Balabha Giravadir Hari. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Janaranjana. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Janaranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabihari.
Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahamsa Vrajagacharya Satir Sadashi Shrimad Svayangrace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai Samaveda Bhaktivinoda Ki Jai Gaura Premananda. All glories to some of the devotees, all glories to some of the devotees, all glories to some of the devotees, all glories to Sri Guru and Sri Guranga. Nama Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Vasayapitave Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasati and Gaura Vani Vishnu Vivishishi Shri Vadi Vasita Visitarane. Om Gyan Tamandasha Gananjana Salakaya Chakshul Mitamina Tasmai Shri Gravena Maha Vanchakal Paturbisha Kribisindabibicha Patitano Pavanebio Vaishavibio Namo Namaha. Hare Krishna. Well, we have no verse today because we have several appearance and disappearance days to cover, and there's a lot of material on that. This is a very auspicious day, as was mentioned. First of all, it is the first day of spring. Basanta Panchami, at least I guess in India, it's the first day of spring. And it's probably, it always feels kind of spring-like here, so anyway. But this is the appearance day of Srimati Vishnupriya Devi, of Sri Raghunandana Thakur, the appearance of Srila Raghunath Das Goswami, one of the six Goswamis, the appearance of Pundarik Vijayaniti Prabhu Thakur, I'm not sure what the title is. And it is the disappearance day of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. So this is a very important day, a very auspicious day, because we have these appearances and disappearances of these great saintly personalities and acharyas in our Vaishnav line. So, of course, we have the opportunity to associate with those devotees through sound, through hearing. And this is one of the important aspects of these appearance and disappearance days, that it enables us to remember these great devotees and to get their association and thus their mercy. So by hearing about their activities, their pastimes, their preaching, we become enlivened and we become purified in their association. Because we understand that through spiritual sound, vibration, shabda, we are associating directly with these great personalities. So our scriptures always emphasizes the power of sadhu sangha, or the association of devotees. And this is, of course, an opportunity to get that association. The verdict of all revealed scriptures that even a moment's association with a pure devotee, one can attain all success. In the Bhagavatam 118, 13 says, the value of a moment's association with a devotee of the Lord cannot be compared even to the attainment of the heavenly planets or liberation from matter. What to speak of worldly benediction in the form of material prosperity, which is for those who are meant for death. So I thought I would discuss just a few moments before we get into some of the biographies and pastimes of some of these personalities. I'll cover as much as I can today, probably run out of time. But just a little bit about this idea of association with devotees, about the importance of that association with devotees, how we should associate offenses against devotees, how to deal with those things. And who better to speak about such matters as Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. As this is his disappearance day, he's written extensively on these matters, and many of you are familiar with his writings and his purports. And one thing that always impressed me, and I will admit I'm a great fan of his writing, he's my second favorite author after Srila Prabhupada. And in his commentaries on Bhaktivinoda Sindhu, commentaries on Bhagavad Gita, and particularly his commentaries on the Srimad Bhagavatam are well known. His 10th canto Bhagavatam purports and commentaries, I think, are especially appreciated by many devotees. In fact, in the later chapters that were translated and commented on by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada, there are some purports that are taken like two or three pages in total, exactly verbatim from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, and because they're that important. And in fact, Srila Prabhupada, specifically, I think it's right in one of the first verses, the first purports in the Srimad Bhagavatam, actually advises us to study the commentaries of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, particularly his Bhagavatam commentaries. So what does he say about some of these things? There's a nice verse from the Bhagavatam, 3:25:25. In the association of pure devotees, discussion of the pastimes and activities of the Supreme Personality is very pleasing and satisfying to the ear and heart. By cultivating such knowledge, one gradually become advanced on the path of liberation, and therefore he is freed and his attraction becomes fixed. Then real devotion and devotional service begins. Now, Vishnu's purport on this is quite interesting because he gives a little, you know, a little extra twist or a little little more information on this and a way to understand the Bhagavatam even better. He says, only by association with devotees does the mind develop attraction to the Lord. The stages are described here. The previous verse mentioned that association should be desired. Then faith first arises. From excellent, the word is pra, association of devotees, stories of my pastimes become nectar for the ears. From inferior association, there is only bhajana kriya, but the stories do not become nectar. Thus, from excellent association, the stories cause anarta niriti. Then those stories cause nishta, then ruchi up to prema. So it's a very, very interesting point about the power, not just of association, but the qualitative difference of association of pure devotees of the Lord, of very advanced devotees. Vishwanath is telling us that one can attain the stage of bhajana kriya through more or less ordinary association, but to actually purify oneself, to clear the anartas from the heart and reach the higher stages of love of God, one must associate with very advanced devotees. So I found that was a very interesting commentary. I'd come across that some time ago. So the association with devotees, such as the great personalities that we're observing today, is very, very critical. But it's also important that we associate in the right way. And Vishwanath has also written about offenses to devotees and how we should avoid those things. Of course, he states, this is from the Madhurya Kadambini, the first offense is to criticize and blaspheme the devotees. Blaspheming in this context means to become envious of and antagonistic towards the saintly devotees. So it's interesting that he's extended the idea of blasphemy not just to saying a negative thing verbally, but also to carry envy within the heart, or to be antagonistic, to be having negative mood towards the devotee. So something to be aware of. He says about the effects of offenses. In spite of the fact that bhava or rati has appeared, the obstacles have not completely dissipated. Such persons are therefore classed as sadhakas. There still remains a trace of some serious aparad, because the effects of aparad are very strong and long-lasting. In this condition, with even a trace of aparadha that generates suffering, sadhya bhakti, the perfectional stage, cannot appear. And this is from his commentary on Bhakti Visarami Dasindo 121. So, again, mentioning this to us that the effects of aparadha are very serious because one is not able to reach the perfectional stage of chanting Hare Krishna. I thought there was another very interesting commentary, I thought, of Vishwanathacharya Thakur's is in the sixth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the first two or three chapters, which is the story of Ajamil. And then we have Ajamil's story, and then we have the instructions, we have the interchange between the Yamadutas and Vishnudutas, and then we have Yamaraj's instructions to the Yamadutas, right? The Vishnudutas, they already understood the philosophy. The Yamadutas need to be instructed by Yamaraj. And he has some very, very interesting commentaries in there about the powers of the holy name to purify one and about offenses to devotees. And in one of those places, I think it's the second chapter, he says that there are, of all the offenses, that the two offenses are most powerful. Those are offending or blaspheming devotees, the first one, and the second, committing sin on the strength of chanting. So he said, with the other offenses against the holy name, those continued chanting relieves without suffering. In other words, one becomes purified of most of the offenses by continued chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra. But in those particular ones, offending or blaspheming devotees and committing sin on the strength of chanting, he says, with these, one suffers as one is becoming purified. So we know that one of the causes of suffering that is given by our acharyas and Vishwanath particularly is offenses to devotees. And he's mentioning these two in particular will cause suffering even while one is becoming purified on the path of pure devotional service. So very, very important to note. But moving to the positive side, we have a remedy for committing offenses that Vishwanath also gives us in the Madhurya Kandambani. He says, if one even accidentally commits this offense against a Vaishnav, he must bitterly repent his low behavior. Just as poison is counteracted by poison, similarly the offender, having set aflame his spiritual life with blasphemy, must be purified in the fire of contrition. The offender must go and fall at the feet of the devotee he has reviled and beg forgiveness until he is again able to please that Vaishnav. Yet, if for some reason he is unable to appease the devotee, then the offender must continue to serve him for many days in a way that will impress and satisfy him. In case the offense is of such serious nature that the Vaishnav's ire remains unpacified, then the offender must strongly condemn his own abominable action and think, oh, how shameful, I have blasphemed the Vaishnav. With a heavy heart, the aparadhi must then take complete shelter of the holy name and chant incessantly, knowing this to be his only hope. So that's our remedy for the offense of blasphemy to the devotees. He talks further about purification of chanting and talks about the different stages, the offensive stage, the nambas, the clearing stage, and the pure stage. And this is one of my favorite quotes from Vishwanathacharya Chakravarti Thakur. He says, while there are still offenses, while we're in this nambas stage or clearing stage of the chanting of the holy name, he says there are 14 stages of devotional service. Now, those are the stages that we know starting from Shraddha, Sadhu Sangha, up to Prema, but he's expanded them into 14, gave some more in-between or intermittent stages. So he says, while there are still offenses, we go through the 14 stages of devotional service. At this offenseless stage of chanting, pure chanting, there are only two stages. You know what they are? Chant Hare Krishna and go back to Godhead. So, very simple. Once we have reached the platform of pure chanting of the holy name. Okay, well, I wanted to just give a little flavor of some of the writing of Vishwanathacharya Thakur and some of the incredibly valuable contributions of which this is only a small sampling that he has made to Vaishnava literature. And I'll read a little biographical thing about him in a little bit. So because we have several appearance and disappearances, we'll have to go through a couple of these rather quickly. One is Raghunandana Thakur. I'm sure there's quite a bit about him, not so much in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. He was considered the 39th branch of the tree of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and one of the descendants. His father was Mukunda, very close associate of Lord Chaitanya, and he was considered to be a very, very important preacher and associate of Lord Chaitanya. There's one story where Lord Chaitanya asked Mukunda, his father, if Raghunandana was his father or his son. It was one of those sort of paradoxical questions. And Mukunda replied that actually Raghunandana was his father because he was his spiritual teacher. And Lord Chaitanya was establishing through Mukunda and Raghunandana the idea that if one is a guru, if one is spiritual master, then their position is irrelevant. So in this sense, the son acted as the father or the teacher, the instructor for the father. It is also the appearance of Srimati Vishnupriya Devi. She was the second wife of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu after his first wife passed away. Mother Sachi was felt great bereavement on the passing of her daughter-in-law, and so she encouraged Lord Chaitanya to remarry. So he married his second wife, Vishnupriya, who was, of course, none other than the goddess of fortune, great personality. There's not a lot described about their relationship or interaction. We know that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took sannyas at age 24, and in one place, Srila Prabhupada said that Vishnupriya was probably no more than 16 years old or so. So she was very, very young. And of course, she had to face the rest of her life with her as a widow, basically, as her husband taking sannyas. Not so much as described. There is one part in the Chaitanya Bhagavat, you can look up, which is a very nice description. It's actually about an interchange relationship of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Vishnupriya on the night before he takes sannyas. And there it's somewhat revealed that obviously the relationship was not one of an ordinary husband and wife, but obviously a very, very deep, eternal spiritual connection, you know, and Vishnupriya says eternal consort. And so, obviously, although she was outwardly, physically bereft of his association with that lifetime, their relationship is eternal. And more of that came out in their very close relationship. Although, Srila Prabhupada pointed out one purport that Lord Chaitanya only joked with her once. Lord Chaitanya was so strict in his relationship with women that said that he only once or twice even joked with his wife. And I think the joke is mentioned there. I forget what it was. So anyway, another great personality who has appeared on this day. So let's see, I'm saying we have. We'll next turn to Raghunath Das Goswami. Raghunath Das, of course, is one of the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. Great personality, extremely advanced devotee. He, like some of these other great personalities, have eternal relationships. He is, of course, one of the Manjari gopis in his eternal relationship with Krishna in Goloka. And I'll just read this section here. Sri Raghunath Das took his birth in the village of Krishnapura in the district of Hooghly. He was born in the Shaka era of 1428 and left the world in 1504. His father's name was Sri Govardhan, whose elder brother was Sri Hiranyadas. Both of them were respectable, wealthy landholders belonging to the Kayastha caste. In his childhood, Sri Raghunath Das studied at the house of the priest Acharya Sri Balaram Das. Haridas Thakur was very merciful to Balaram Das and occasionally visited his house. At these times, Raghunath Das had the good fortune of relishing Thakur Haridas's association and listened to philosophical discourses from him. Sri Raghunath Das was the only son in the family of Haranyan Govardhan, and there was no limit to the care and affection which was showered upon him. Though he was brought up just like the son of a king by the powerful influence of saintly devotees, he realized at a very young age that material existence is temporary, and a mood of detachment towards wealth, parents, and relatives began to grow within him. Upon hearing the glories of Sri Gauranga and Nityananda, he became extremely eager to have darshan of their lotus feet. When he heard that Sri Gaurasundar had taken sannyas and was leaving Nadia forever, he rushed madly to the home of Advaitacharya in Shantipur to meet the Lord. Sri Raghunath fell at his feet. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu could understand that this was his dear most eternal associate, and he embraced Raghunath firmly. Crying, Sri Raghunath appealed to the Lord, "I will also go with you." But the Lord replied that he would not take him along at that time, yet upon his return from Vrindavan, Raghunath should, under any pretext, come to Nilachala to see him. In Chaitanya Charitamrita Anchalila's sixth chapter, there is a narration of how Sri Raghunath Das was arrested by the Nawab's men and his subsequent release from the bondage of family life. In that chapter, there's also a description of the Panihati festival, as well as Raghunath's pastimes in Jagannath Puri with Sri Gaurasundar. Sri Raghunath used to reside at Sri Radhakund. At that time, Radhakund had not been excavated, though Raghunath often meditated upon how to beautify the kund. Once, a wealthy merchant walked the long, difficult road to Sri Badaraksham. With great devotion, he worshipped Badarinath and offered a large portion of his wealth in charity. That night, Sri Badrinarayan appeared to him in a dream and said, "You should go to the village near Vraja named Aritgram, where you will find my devotee, Sri Raghunath Das Goswami. To him you should deliver all your wealth. If he refuses to accept it, tell him I sent you and remind him about restoring Radhakund." The merchant happily returned to his home and then went on to Vraja, where he met Sri Raghunath and explained everything to him. Astonished, Raghunath gave him permission to restore both Radhakund and Shyamakund. Raghunath Das Goswami was always engaged in worshipping Sri Radha Govinda within his mind. One day, in his meditation, he prepared and offered sweet rice to Sri Radha and Krishna. In great happiness, he offered them, and Krishna and the gopis ate the sweet rice, and Raghunath accepted their remnants. While he was honoring the Lord's prasad, he was filled with intense love and ate slightly more than he was accustomed to. He's doing this in his mind. This is completely in meditation. The next day, from morning till late afternoon, his door remained closed, causing the devotees some concern. After they knocked repeatedly on his door, it finally opened and they saw him lying down. "My health is not good," he explained to Sridas. The devotees were unhappy and immediately sent word to Sanatan Goswami in Mathura. Upon hearing the news, Balabhacharya's son, Sri Vital, sent two doctors to see Raghunath Das at Radhakund. Seeing his condition, the physicians insisted that Raghunath's illness was the result of eating too much sweet rice. The devotees were dumbfounded by such a suggestion, because he is known for, of course, his great austerity, but eventually understood the mystery. The worship of Raghunath Das Goswami was very wonderful. Kavi Karnapur has written in the, what's the GGD? Gaura Gopinath Deepika, yeah. That Sri Raghunath was Rasa Manjari in Krishna Leela. According to some persons, he was Rati Manjari or Banumati. Raghunath Das wrote many books such as Stavavali, Dhanacharita, Muktacharita, etc. Okay, a little bit. There's many more pastimes. There's a few. Let's hear about Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur took birth in the year 1654 Shaka era, some say 1638. It doesn't mention here, but I believe he lived up until about 1720 or something, because I know his commentary on the Bhagavatam was written about 1704. So he lived some time, and he was one of the last sort of remaining of that, I think that he had association with Jiva Goswami, who was a generation younger than the other Goswamis, but he was kind of a little bit after, a couple generations after the Goswamis, up into the 1700s. Okay. He appeared in the Radia line of Brahmins. He had two brothers, Sri Ramabhadra Chakravarti and Sri Raghunath Chakravarti. Srila Chakravarti Thakur went on to live in the Murshidabad district of West Bengal, where he received mantra initiation from Sri Krishna Charna Chakravarti. He lived for a long time in the house of his Gurudev, where he wrote many books. Because Chakravarti Thakur lived for so long in Sayadabad, he became known as a resident of Sayadabad. When Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur lived in Nadia, he closely studied the scriptures, beginning with a study of Sanskrit grammar, poetry, and rhetoric. It is said that even as a boy in school, he was an undefeatable scholar who could overcome anyone in argument and debate. From an early age, he was indifferent towards family life. For the purpose of binding his son in the contract of family life, Vishwanath's father arranged for his marriage when he was very young. He remained a married man for only a short time. Soon he renounced his wife and home and went to live in Vrindavan. After this, his parents and relatives made many unsuccessful attempts to induce him to return to family life, but Vishwanath Chakravarti was fixed in his determination to renounce worldly life and surrender himself completely to the service of Krishna. After having come to Vrindavan Dham, Sri Vishwanath took up his residence in the Bhajan Kutir of Sri Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami on the banks of the Radhakund, where there lived a disciple of Krishnadas Kaviraj whose name was Mukundadas. There, Sri Vishwanath Chakravarti made a careful study of the Goswami's literature. In that holy place, he later wrote many commentaries on the books of the Goswamis. For instance, he wrote the commentaries of Rupa Goswami's Bhaktivedanta Sindhu, and those commentaries are in print now in Bhanu Swami's translation of that, along with Jiva Goswami's. After having come to Vrindavan Dham, Sri Vishwanath took up, I just read that, Sri Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur established the worship of the deity of Sri Gokulananda. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur was also sometimes known as Haribalabha Das. His title, Chakravarti, was awarded to him by the devotees. Generally, this title designates one who maintains varti, a circle, chakra, of influence. He who reveals the jewels of devotion to Vishwanath, the Lord of the universe, and thus expands the circle of bhakti, is a chakravarti. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti has written many books, among which are the following: commentaries on the Srimad Bhagavatam, Sarta Darshana Tika, Bhagavad Gita, Sarta Varshini Tika, Alankara Kostava, Ujvala Nilamani, Ananda Vrindavan Champu, Rupa Goswami's Vigdagda Madhava Natakam, these are all commentaries, I think, on these, Gopal Tapani Upanishad, Chaitanya Charitamrita, and original works such as Sri Krishna Bhavanamrita Mahakavya, Swapna Vilasimrita, Madhuryakan Dambani. That's available. I think many of you probably have seen that one, the translation in English. Stavamala, Lahari, and Aishwarya Kadambani. The Diksha Parampara of Sri Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is given as follows: Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Lokanath Goswami, Narottam Das Thakur, Ganga Narayan Chakravarti, Krishna Charana Chakravarti, Radha Raman Chakravarti, then Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Sri Krishna Charana Chakravarti and Radha Raman Chakravarti both lived in Sayabad. He studied extensively under them when he was in Sayabad before going to Vrindavan, where he met Mukundadas Goswami, a disciple of Krishnadas Goswami, and studied the Goswami literatures. He has a, isn't Baladev Vijayabhushan, I believe, is his, if not Diksha, his Shiksha disciple. He's probably the most prominent person following him. Here's a little bit more. He was known as the crest jewel of the Vaishnavas because of his pure devotion, scholarship, and realized perception of Radha Gokulananda's intimate conjugal pastimes. Gaudiya authorities say that Sri Rupa Goswami is Vag Deva Devatara, an incarnation of the god of speech. And Gaudiya Acharyas, especially among his direct disciples, believe that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is an incarnation of Sri Rupa Goswami. I haven't actually know if that's true or not. You know. Anyway, this was... Some other devotees wrote this. Among all Gaudiya Vaishnava Acharyas, only Vishwanath Chakravarti comes close to matching Srila Rupa Goswami's profound realizations of the Absolute Truth. That's obviously someone's interpretation. I would tend to agree with it. Sri Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur was the protector, guardian, and acharya during the middle period, the 16 to 1700s, and of the historical development of Gaudiya Vaishnavism. In a dream, Lord Krishna ordered Vishwanath to make commentaries on the Goswami's books. Immediately he started to write prolifically. Clouds would shield him from the sun whenever he started to write. Once a torrential downpour flooded the area where Vishwanath was writing his Bhagavat commentaries. Miraculously, not a drop touched Vishwanath or his Bhagavat manuscript. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur wrote over 40 Sanskrit books on the science of pure devotion to Radha Giridhari. He also made the sweetest, most highly realized Rasika Tika's commentaries on the Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, and works of Srila Rupa Goswami, Kavi Karnapur, and Narottam Das Thakur. His samadhi is in the Radha Gokulananda temple courtyard in Vrindavan, and that's what I have on him. Of course, we also just to remember, I think I sometimes forget this, of course, he is the author of the Guru Astaka, that we sing every morning at Mangal Artik. I don't know if he wrote many songs, but that's one obviously very famous and prominent one that he did write. Okay. Pundarik Vijayaniti. We're just really on a marathon roll here today. Pundarik Vijayaniti is mentioned in the Adi Lila 10:14 as one of the branches of the Chaitanya tree. Said Pundarik Vijayaniti is the third big branch, was so dear to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that in his absence, Lord Chaitanya himself would sometimes cry. In the Gauri Ganadesh Deepika, Srila Pundarik Vijayaniti is described as the father of Srimati Radharani in Krishna Leela. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu therefore treated him as his father. Pundarik Vijayaniti's father was known as Baneshvara, or according to another opinion, Sukalambara Brahmacharya, and his mother's name was Ganga Devi. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu called Pundarik Vijayaniti father and gave him the title Premaniti. This is from Prabhupada's purport in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Pundarik Vijayaniti later became the spiritual master of Gadadhar Pandit and an intimate friend of Sarup Damodar's. Gadadhar Pandit at first misunderstood Pundarik Vijayaniti to be an ordinary pounds and shillings man, but later, upon being corrected by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he became his disciple. Another incident in the life of Pundarik Vijayaniti involves his criticizing the priest of the Jagannath Temple, for which Jagannath Prabhu chastised him personally by slapping his cheeks. This is described in the Chaitanya Bhagavat, Anchalila, Chapter 7. Okay, I think we have time. I can read that pastime of Pundarik Vijayaniti and Gadadhar Pandit. This is condensed somewhat because it's quite long, and from the Chaitanya Bhagavat. After hearing the wonderful qualities of Gadadhar Pandit, Vijayaniti was very pleased to meet him. The great personality, Sri Pundarik Vijayaniti, sat like a prince. His beautiful bed was made of wood, covered with intricate brass and reddish stone inlay work. Above it were three tiers of ornamental drapes made of glittering brocade cloth. He was seated on a soft mattress covered with clean, expensive sheets, and silk pillows were placed under his back. He wore a sandalwood paste tilak mark upon his forehead, and his face was decorated with dots made from a mixture of sandalwood and perfume. As for his hair, it was well-groomed and shining with delicately perfumed hair oil. Two persons stood behind him, fanning him gently with long peacock feathers, and in front of him was a nicely prepared hammock. As he followed a life of pure devotional service, he looked as charming as Cupid himself. Those who did not know him would consider him a prince, and everything about him and around him gave the impression that he was a man of the easy and comfortable life given to pleasure. When Gadadhar Pandit saw these luxurious items in a general atmosphere of materialistic life, he became suspicious. Since Gadadhar was a fully renounced soul from his early childhood, naturally, some doubts regarding the character of Pundarik Vijayaniti entered his heart. He thought, what sort of Vaishnav is this, surrounded by so much finery and lavish living? Hearing about his devotional mood, I developed great respect for this person, but now upon seeing him, it is slowly giving way to doubt and suspicion. Mukunda understood the mind and the heart of Gadadhar Pandit, and thus he took it upon himself to reveal the true nature of Pundarik Vijayaniti. By the special mercy of Lord Krishna, Gadadhar Pandit would be allowed to perceive everything, and nothing would remain secret. In a very sweet voice, Mukunda began to sing a verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam describing the glories of devotional service. Alas, how shall I take shelter of one more merciful than he who has granted the position of mother to the she-demon Putana? Putana was unfaithful and always hankering for the blood of human children. With that desire in mind, she prepared deadly poison to be sucked from her breast and came to kill Krishna. But because she offered her breast to the Lord, she attained the greatest achievement. As soon as these words concerning devotional service entered his ears, Pundarik Vijayaniti began to weep. Tears of ecstatic love welled up in his eyes, rolling down his face profusely like the streams of the Ganga. Simultaneously, all the symptoms of ecstasy manifested on his person. He wept, trembled, rolled, horripilated. You all know what horripilated means? It means goosebumps. Goosebumps. Roared and finally fell into an unconscious state of ecstasy. There's actually, this description goes on for a few more paragraphs. I had to cut out. Then suddenly regaining consciousness, he said in a loud voice, "Speak, speak," and again fell down to the ground. Agitated with spiritual emotion, he kicked everything that was near him and all the luxurious paraphernalia went crashing to the ground. He cried out, "O Krishna, my Lord, my soul, my very life, you have made me hard-hearted like a stone." He lamented loudly, piteously crying out, "I have been deprived of the Lord's association in his most merciful incarnation." He rolled around and crashed down to the ground. Everyone was afraid he would break his bones. He then lay down without breathing, totally submerged in an ocean of spiritual ecstasy. Amazed at what he had witnessed, Gadadhar Pandit began to worry, thinking, "What inauspiciousness has overcome me to make me think in such an offensive manner about this great personality?" He embraced Mukunda, being extremely pleased with him. Drenching him with tears of love, he said, "Mukunda, you have acted like a true friend. You have shown me a pure and unalloyed devotee of the Lord. It'd be difficult to find another pure Vaishnav like him anywhere in this entire creation." On becoming totally purified simply by observing his one can become totally purified by observing his devotional attitude. "Today, because you're right next to me, I've been able to avoid a great catastrophe. When I saw all the luxurious paraphernalia, I was convinced he was materialistic Vaishnav given to the pleasures of life." All the devotees who have surrendered to the Lord by the process of devotional service have accepted the shelter and instructions of a guide. Yet I do not have such an instructor. So I have decided to take shelter of Pundarik Vijayaniti and follow devotional service under his guidance. I shall counteract all my offenses to him by becoming his disciple. Pundarik Vijayaniti smiled and said, "Be assured that I will do as you request, for by the Lord's mercy, it is my great fortune to meet a person who is like a precious gem. Such a disciple may be found only as the result of many lifetimes of pious activities. The forthcoming 12th day of the waxing moon is very auspicious. Meet me here then, and your plan will become successful." Overjoyed, Gadadhar Pandit offered his obeisances and took leave of Pundarik Vijayaniti. Mukunda and Gadadhar went straight to Lord Gauranga, who happily received the news of Pundarik Vijayaniti's arrival. Okay, Jai. So I think this concludes our recitation of some of the pastimes. We have a couple minutes. I know there's probably uncounted pastimes of some of these great personalities. If somebody has a couple of things to offer, yes.
Trying to move here, so there's a few actions to bring that about. But in that narration about Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he describes the history that Vishwanath was very convinced that, you know, he could see that the Sanskrit language was gradually losing its power, so he taught a lot in Sanskrit. He had a Sanskrit school in that village that you mentioned. Hmm. And that when he finally had the opportunity to move to Vrindavan, when he went there, it's described that Vrindavan had been completely devastated by the Muslim magistrate Aurangzeb, I think, and so he was like, he himself was totally devastated, and so he was praying and trying to figure out how to restore some of the glories of Vrindavan, and I believe the devotee who was living in the samadhi or the bhajan kutir of Krishnadas Kaviraj helped him to begin to restore the area. And the other thing that he did was he saw that the local people of Vrindavan and in that area were not so, they couldn't really grasp some of the esoteric qualities of the Goswami's writings. So his mission that he made was to make it more accessible. And he was really praying to Krishna, well, like, how can I make this more successful? And that's where I found it very interesting that Baladev Vidyabhushana came along to help him with that. And together they worked to bring out, you know, writing commentaries. And so when I read that, I realized that it might have been a reason that Srila Prabhupada dedicated the Bhagavad Gita to him,
Baladev
Vidyabhushana, because, you know, that was his mood, was to bring this knowledge to people in his area, and then Srila Prabhupada then took it one step further, bringing it to the West. So I thought that was interesting that he would dedicate the Bhagavad Gita, and obviously we've been benedicted by that.
Well, thank you. That's a really, really nice connection. And it is true that when you read the commentaries of Vishwanath, they're very deep and very profound, but they're also very accessible. I think there's been some good translation work too, maybe. But it's it seems very quite clear. It's not overly esoteric, but you know, it's simple and profound, much like Srila Prabhupada's writings. Yeah. Okay, we should probably end class at this point. Thank you much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.